on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 93-year-old Bob Austin of Oakhurst, California. He's lived there since 1988, but he's originally from Hawaii. He spent some of his formative years in the state of Washington, and during World War II, he was flying missions as a B-24 pilot with the 459th Bomb Group, the 757th Squadron, out of Cerignola, Italy. His last mission ended with a crash landing in a muddy Yugoslavian field, and it would be nearly 3 months before he was evacuated. We're going to get to all of that, but before I forget, let's go back to this trying to loop the plane. So you're over there in Italy, you're flying combat missions, but you decide you're going to try to loop this B-24, and explain to everyone listening what that means when you say looping a plane. This is something fighter pilots would do, but not usually a bomber. So explain to us what the idea is and how it actually turned out.
Well, you go up to about 15,000 feet and put it in a dive and then pull out. And you get to the top of the loop, it loses lift, so you spin out. I lost about 6,000 feet.
Did your engine stall out on you?
No, they didn't, fortunately.
But what did that feel like?
Pretty much normal, because you have a belt on and so forth. You're strapped in.
Were you at all thinking this might end badly?
I was concerned whether there would be catches or not. And it hollered in by the commanding officer.
What would have happened to you if they did?
Well, they might have sent us down either court-martial or some other punishment, because it wasn't usual. You don't do those things normally.
Yeah, so you could have been grounded for a while.
Righto, be grounded.
Are you still glad you tried it?
I never regretted it.
Have you ever met another B-24 pilot who took his in a loop?
Never found one that did.
Maybe you'll hear from one after this program. Well, if that loop wasn't excitement enough, you certainly endured a roller coaster ride from the start of your last mission to your repatriation, I guess. Tell me about that, December 2nd, 1944. What was your target supposed to be?
The target was Odertal Oil Refinery, which is about 800 miles from where we were. That's a five-hour trip at 160 miles an hour. I don't recall what the exact route was, but we went up the Adriatic Sea beyond northern Italy into Austria and then through Austria into Czechoslovakia.
You bombed the oil refinery, so you've completed the mission, you've dropped your bombs, you're heading home, and what happened?
The engineer said that we were running out of fuel and we had to do something, land or crash or whatever. So I radioed the commanding officer, and he said, well, we will send a P-38 to see you down. Never saw him again. So I had to go through those clouds.
You said you're running out of fuel. There was a reason for that, right?
I think it was because we had used too much going up to the target.
So because it was really pushing the limits of your range on the way back, you're running out of fuel. And the weather was pretty gray. You couldn't really see where you were, huh?
Clouds were about 2,000 feet thick all over Europe. So we had to go through the clouds. That was kind of a scary feeling when you go through the clouds. You know, you're in a fog. You're in a fog. So then all of a sudden this huge hole opened up, and I'm sure that our Lord was with us then. And
all of a sudden a hole in the clouds.
Yeah. I just decided to dump the plane. Down we went, and we hit the mud. The mud was about 2 or 3 feet thick, and it slowed the plane down real quick.
What do you think your altitude was when you came out of the clouds?
No idea what it was.
You were pretty low, and all of a sudden you get through the clouds. You know that you're somewhere near a runway?
I knew they were just very short distance to the ground, you know, a couple thousand feet maybe.
But did you know from your navigator that you guys were in the vicinity of an airbase or no?
Navigator didn't know where we were.
So you're literally flying blind, right? Literally and figuratively flying blind.
Navigator didn't help us at all.
So all of a sudden, as you said, God was with you. This hole opens up in the clouds. You dump down through it. And how did you figure out where to go?
I just gave it full throttle to get the plane to go in near the trees so we could have trees hide the plane, which we did later on. We had the partisans cut some of the trees and lay up against the ship to try to hide it. The Germans came almost every day, tried to bomb it. They never hit it.
Okay, so I just want everyone to understand this. So your navigator didn't know where you were, but did you have an idea that you were over enemy-held territory?
Pretty much so. That's why we didn't bail out. We thought sure that the Wehrmacht, which is the Nazi army, was on the ground somewhere.
What you find out once you hit the ground is that you're in Croatia. Zagreb was maybe 20 miles away. But you said you came into the mud. So was there a runway there that you tried to land on? This is just an open, muddy field.
It was a cornfield. That's all it was, a muddy cornfield.
But you saw it and said, that looks like a good spot?
I didn't have much choice. When we had to go, we had to go.
Because the fuel was so low.
We had to crank down the gear, too, because I think the German aircraft must have hit a hydraulic. We had to hand crank the gear down.
So you had been shot up by a German aircraft on this one?
I think they just barely hit it somewhere. It didn't hit the propeller system, because that's also hydraulic.
So again, I'm just trying to understand this. So the hole opens up in the clouds. You guys come through it. You're running out of fuel. You tell the crew, crank down the landing gear because the hydraulics had been shot out. So this is kind of a chaotic scene,
yeah,
it sounds like.
Yeah.
What was going through your head?
All we wanted to do was get down. And fortunately, it was pretty close diving down through that hole that was made for us. I'm sure it was purposely made for us to go through it. I'll always be thankful for that.
What do you think would have happened if that hole didn't open up?
We might have gone on further distance, maybe crashed into trees or something. We probably would have run out of fuel eventually. I don't remember how much fuel was left. It wasn't very much.
So you head into this cornfield. How forceful was that landing? What did it feel like when you hit?
It was kind of soft because of the mud. Mud was so thick. Mud must have been 2 or 3 feet thick. I remember it just splashed all over the wing of the plane when we hit the ground. And then the partisans put us into 2 homes, 5 of us in each home. The partisans gave us a little bit of meat once a week. Most of the time it was barley soup. I got sick and tired of barley soup.
Well, and you said before the partisans hid you out, was it a British officer who saw you and came out and yelled at you?
Well, they had a major and a captain and 2 lance corporals from England. He was Scotch, as I remember, the major. And they did the coordination with Italy on the physical drops with the Lancaster bombers and the B-24s. They dropped all these huge canister at night, boots, coats, machine guns, landmines, the whole works. Mm-hmm. And then you wake up the next morning and you see beautiful parachutes all over the place, orange, red, green, all over the landscape. They had bonfires so the planes could come in, see the bonfires, and drop that stuff. So we watched them at night.
So this was territory in then what was Yugoslavia that's being fought over at that time. It was up for grabs. It wasn't necessarily Nazi controlled.
The only part that was Nazi controlled were the railroads. The land was pretty much inaccessible because of the nature of the ground, like I said, so much mud. In the wintertime, they had the oxen tow these carts. But when it was warmer weather, it was just mud.
I think you may have just hinted at it, but explain to everyone why you couldn't just pick up and leave and go back to your base.
No way out.
The way would be to get on a train, and the Nazis controlled those.
The Nazis controlled the railroad lines clear down into Greece, Albania and Greece. So there was no trains. We knew that eventually we'd get out. It was 88 days later. December 2nd, 44, to 1st of March, 45. They came in with C-47 aircraft, 2 of them. By then, we had about 75 people that had escaped from prisons. And so they all lifted us out to Bari, Italy, headquarters.
But that's an awful long 88 days, I'm sure. And again, just to educate people, because you lived through this, but most people are saying, boy, I've never really even heard of this. But maybe they've heard of Marshal Tito and the Yugoslavian resistance. And that's who these partisans are on the side of. So here, and all your crew survived? No injuries?
Yeah, everybody survived. The only one that got injured later was one of the gunners. He got injured in the leg. And the nose gunner died of a urinary infection.
While you were over there?
No, after we came back.
But you all survived this crash landing, and you all survived the captivity. Something tells me your crew probably was thankful that you brought it down the way you did.
I never got much of a thanks for bringing it in. I guess it was just understood.
But you were at the controls?
Yes, I was. The other fellow was actually the pilot,
right.
But we traded off. I have almost as much first pilot time as he does, or did.
But I mean, I'm just thinking the margin for error was probably pretty slim. I mean, if you come down a little later or at a different angle or a little different way, you guys all could have died.
We probably could have crashed, maybe got killed, yeah.
But you don't. You survive, and then you have these partisans who are watching out for you, making sure the Nazis don't get a hold of you so you don't get sent to a prison camp. But you don't know when you're going to get out of there. So what were those 3 months like?
We foraged for food a lot because it was very scarce. We managed to go to an adjoining village where the man had lived in the USA. And he came back to Yugoslavia and set up a market. And so we helped him pitch hay into a loft. And he gave us a real nice dinner that was very infrequent, though. That didn't happen very often.
How did you spend most of your days?
Most of the days helping the people in the neighborhood cut firewood, help them around the place. Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think of all the things that we did. We did a lot of help for the home. Oh, we took our parachutes. We let them cut it up for making clothes for the children. In fact, they made me a pair of pajamas. I still have it.
You still have your parachute pajamas?
Yeah.
You don't have to show me right now, but I'll put a picture up at hometownheroesradio.com so everyone can see your parachute pajamas sewn in Yugoslavia during World War II. What about your family? Did they have any clue what had happened to you?
The major that was in charge of the British group radioed the 15th Air Force telling who we were, where we belonged, and that was radioed back to the States.
So your mother probably got a telegram or something that said you were missing in action?
Department, yeah.
But she had no way of getting mail to you?
No, no way.
And you had no way of getting mail to her?
No.
That had to be an awfully lonely feeling.
It was pretty lonely at times when you start thinking about home. We always wanted to go home, of course.
Did you ever ponder or question whether your side was going to win the war?
We were pretty sure we'd win it because the bombers were really pounding them. I mean, can you imagine the cities like up north, northern Germany? Oh, gosh, it was awful. Schweinhurst was one of them. Oh, those cities were really pounded. Unfortunately, a lot of civilians died.
And you guys would hear reports of this because of radio contact or what?
Once in a while, somebody found a copy and gave it to the British, who gave it to us, of the Army Times. And they had all the history of what's happening in the war.
You mentioned earlier there are a couple of guys on the crew that you didn't get along with. But for those 3 months, how much did you and your crewmates rely on each other to keep your spirits up, to keep hope alive?
Well, we did kind of a joke around. We had one deck of playing cards we wore off the face off of it, just playing during the day. Nothing else to do other than help the people around the house, cut firewood, clean the place, whatever. Oh, Christmas time, December 44, they slaughtered their own sow and made blood sausage. It's the first time I ever ate blood sausage.
How was it?
It wasn't bad. It was food.
Maybe you can tell us that, the connection you had that this family, with this family that was keeping you. And
the village carpenter, and they had two children, a boy and a girl. I remember the day I left, they gave him my Boy Scout knife. I didn't have much else to give.
Did they speak English?
No, the lady of the house had a sister that came down from Belgium, and my navigator spoke perfect German, so they corresponded that way through the family. I guess we were lucky in that respect.
Do you know if that boy and that girl are still alive?
Have no idea. They'd be in their 70s or 80s. The girl was older than the boy. The boy was about 9, so that would make him about 79 if they're living.
Do you remember the family's name?
Sever, S-E-V-E-R, Sever, Alois and Maria. The boy was about 9. I think the girl was about 11. They made clothes for him out of the parachutes. We donated the parachutes because we knew we would never use them again.
If they were still alive, maybe they are. If they were sitting right where I'm sitting right now, what would you say to them?
It'd be hard to recollect anything that would be meaningful. Don't speak the same language.
I guess maybe the better question is their hospitality, their generosity, their sacrifice, and the risks that they took on your behalf. What does that mean to you?
Generous, very generous. And we tried to do as much in return by helping out. Yeah, it was quite an experience.
And it's the kind of experience few have ever heard about, partly because the rescue and evacuation of Allied airmen from then Yugoslavia was shrouded in secrecy for quite a while. We'll illuminate a little more history and get the rest of Bob Austin's World War II story in a moment after we hear about a program that Bob is scheduled to be a part of this month when the 8th Central Valley Honor Flight takes off from the former Castle Air Force Base in Atwater, California on October 19th. If you're anywhere in the area, you can go welcome Bob home from his trip on October 21st. Put that on your calendar. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.